Hey everybody, it's Marcus here, and you are listening to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. My name is Marcus, and you are indeed listening to the Good E-Reader Radio Show, the definitive radio broadcast on e-readers, tablet and slate PCs, digital publishing, e-books, e-paper, and everything that falls into that realm. We have just gotten back from Taipei, Taiwan, and we were there for Computex 2011. During the show, I'm going to give you the idea on the most exciting technology and the coolest gadgets that I managed to get my eyes on. First, let's just talk about Taipei a little bit. It's a city of about 15 million, and the city itself is not too large at all. There is millions of scooters and tons of traffic. The one cool thing is that there really isn't any horn honking, there's no road rage, and cars are cutting in between the fifth and first lane to make a turn, cutting everybody off. Everybody just stops and slows down. Nobody seems to get too out of sorts. And so one of the coolest things about Computex was the fact that driving around the city was very, very convenient. I don't speak Mandarin or Cantonese, so the average person couldn't really understand what I was saying, but I managed to get myself along just fine. Computex happened from May 31st until about June 4th or 5th. I was there from about the 29th to about the 5th, And I had a great time, and I saw a ton of interesting looking gadgets. Pretty well, the biggest booths that we saw there that fall into the sort of news that we cover was Asus and Acer. Those two companies, between the two of them, had tons of tablets and tons of funky little gadgets. Let's sort of get into company by company what I think is the most important news. First of all, when Asus was there, they debuted an interesting new device called the Pad Phone. And what this was is a tablet. It was about 10.1 inches, and it came with a smartphone. And it's basically the smartphone that is the heart and soul of the gadget. You plug the phone into more or less like a docking type of station, and when you do, anything that's on the phone will be displayed on a tablet, and you can actually interact with the tablet via the Android operating system and do a lot. I was pretty happy with this device. It came with, its standard HDMI ports, USB, all of that type of stuff, but it was interesting to see almost a tablet that functioned as a dock. So look out for that probably coming out soon. It was basically a prototype type unit that they had, so we for sure didn't see the finished product, but hopefully by the time IFA runs around, when we're going to be going down to Germany, we might see a more refined product. Speaking of further Asus products, they had a product known as the EEE Memo Pad, and this was a 7-inch capacitive touchscreen. The resolution was tremendous, 1280 by 800. It had Google Honeycomb as the operating system, and it had a 1.2 gigahertz Qualcomm CPU. Let's talk about what this device is really good at. It is paired with the world's thinnest stylus, and what it does is it's basically like a 3D memo pad. It does a lot, including making phone calls, and Asus has told us that internationally they're going to allow most carriers to be able to plug in your SIM card and access your data. Asus made a few apps for this, including a notepad and a paint app for it. To me, this was probably the neatest device in the entire conference, in the respect that the stylus interaction was tremendously intuitive. And being able to make calls really separated this from, say, the Samsung Galaxy Tab. You guys might remember that it was the first 7-inch tablet that Samsung put out. In all of its commercials, including in North America, they were hyping the fact that it did video conferencing and it did phone calls. And neither of those things really happened in the US. It was really only in the UK and Europe where the Galaxy Tab actually had carrier support. In North America, it didn't. So hopefully that the Asus one will have it, because obviously it had a 3G SIM port. So if you can get your hands on that, boom, you can make calls. It's all good. So I kind of really dug that item from Asus. Now, let's move more into Acer. They had a few interesting tablets there, including the A500, and this has been out for just a little while, although it hasn't gotten a worldwide release yet. It's running a Honeycomb. It's a 10.1-inch tablet. It's running NVIDIA Tegra dual-core processor. You have about 1 gig of RAM. You have dual cameras. The front one is about 2 megapixels, the back one's 5 megapixels. It includes the standard sort of things you see in tablets, including a micro USB, USB, micro HDMI, and so on. They also had the Acer A100, and this has also been out for a while. It's a 7-inch Android tablet. It was only running Android 2.2. To me, it kind of really felt like this was Acer's rebuttal to the original Samsung Galaxy Tab. It had a little bit sweeter processors underneath the hood. It did have the NVIDIA Tegra 2 dual core, 1 gigahertz, 7-inch screen, 1024 by 600 resolution, as well as dual cameras. This pretty well seemed like the smaller brother to the Acer Icona A500 that I just talked about. So those were kind of two interesting sort of tablets that Acer had. We saw a ton of other devices from other companies. including ViewSonic. ViewSonic had a bunch of tablets at their booth. Some of them have come out, some of them haven't. Some of the ones that haven't come out yet included the ViewSonic ViewPad. This was called the 10 Pro. 10.1-inch capacitive touchscreen, 1024 by 600 pixels. It was actually running a very unique processor. It was running the Intel Oak Trail, and this was a 1.5 gigahertz processor. It also had 32 gigs of a solid-state drive, and if that wasn't enough, you can increase it via micro SD. It has a USB port, HDMI port. You can port it out to 1080p resolution. One of the things that I liked about this is that it had a lot of ViewSonic custom 3D content for the device. It almost kind of felt like a ViewSonic UI. You can check out some of the features that we showed you, but what I really liked this about the ViewSonic. And ViewSonic had a fair number of other devices at the booth too. It had the ViewPad 10H, and this was sort of hidden behind glass. They wouldn't let us at it. It was also 10.1-inch. It included 10-finger multi-touch and had a NVIDIA Tegra 2 1 GHz processor. That was one of probably the more interesting tablets they had. They actually had a few others, including a 7-inch version, and this was called the ViewPad 7X, and this was a 7-inch little dandy. And it has 1024 by 600 resolution, dual cameras, NVIDIA Tegra 2 dual core, as well as 1 gig of RAM. The one really kind of cool thing about this that really differed from the other ViewSonic tablets is they almost had a full 3D interface. Now, this isn't 3D that you would need glasses or anything like that, but you can check out our Computex coverage, or you can just type in ViewSonic in our search bar on our blog at goodyreader.com/blog, and they had a ton of 3D type custom menus that you could make, where you could scroll the menus around, you can name them pictures, music, apps, games, and so on. So you can actually make your own 3D menus. And then if you want to scroll menu to menu, it's you scroll this 3D carousel that you actually see everything that's on it as you're scrolling, and including the other menus. So I thought that was an ingenious little UI addition that ViewSonic made. Of course, there was a lot of other kind of cool companies in attendance showing off some great technology. The Samsung Galaxy Tab, the 10-inch version, that was in attendance, and we got a chance to check it out at the NVIDIA booth. Samsung Galaxy Tab 2 is pretty well the bigger brother to the original Galaxy Tab. 10.1-inch tablet, 1280 by 800 pixels, and it uses a Super PLS-based display screen. Of course, as a Tegra 2 processor, 32 gigs of RAM, and a ton of other features. I really liked this one because it was really lightweight. It felt like I could actually hold a 10-inch tablet in one hand and not have to get, you know, hand stressed or anything like that. I could have seriously used it for quite some time. Speaking of NVIDIA, we actually got some hands-on with their new Tegra 3 processor called Kal-El. Now, during the conference, they all called it Kal-El, but when we were interviewing one of the engineers, he kept on saying Tegra 3, and all the people around him were like, no, 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 it's not Tegra 3, it's Kal-El. So, as far as what this is, it's the NVIDIA Tegra 3 core processor. It features 12 GPU cores, and the resolution of this actually breaks the 1080p threshold and goes to 1440p. That's 2 times 720p and 1.5 times greater than 1080p. This is a very adequate progression. Tegra 3 really hypes the fact that it could do 3D, because 3D requires more frames per second, which means it needs double the pixels. So being able to move to a higher pixel rate would really allow more 3D content to be able to be displayed on a screen, as well as game changers for AAA publishers such as Electronic Arts, Rockstar, companies like that, to actually make 3D content or actually make higher resolution games for mobile devices. So hopefully once more vendors, which NVIDIA said that by the end of 2011, we're going to see some devices come out. They didn't name exactly which ones, but they did drop that by the end of 2011, we're going to actually see numerous high-profile tablets hitting the market that will be using the Tegra 3 processor. So that was pretty well the big breaking news that we dropped. Nobody else kind of picked up on the story. We were actually the only ones in attendance, and this was including sites like EN Gadget and BBC, CNN, they never got the hands-on with this type of technology, as well as having a tablet in our hands that actually had the Tegra 3 processor in it. So it was a great, you know, 7-minute interview that we had with one of the lead engineers, and he kind of walked us through everything. Qualcomm revealed a new dual-core chip at Computex. This was sort of the next-gen chip from them, so we can see them getting packaged with, you know, higher-profile tablets. They actually had a tablet there. It had Android 3.0, a Super AMOLED display, so check out for the new one. Speaking of new chips, we visited the Freescale booth, and they had a few new chips in attendance, including the IMX, and this was the version 6. And this will hold up to 8 CPUs. It'll be able to do, you know, break the 4 gigahertz threshold. It'll be able to do a ton of things. So with the new Freescale chip, Freescale saying that it's mainly built at tablets, they're not really going to focus very much on e-readers. Gigabyte had a company, and of course, you guys probably know that they've released motherboards and laptops and everything like that, so they're a company that's been around for a while. One of the coolest thing about the Gigabyte booth was the crazy amount of hype that was around it. On our last day there, when we managed to check it out, there was roughly about 300 young men there with about 3 or 4 different booth babes, and everyone was chanting Gigabyte, 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 and they would be throwing, you know, 512 MB flash drives, coffee mugs, and all this type of stuff. It was real spectacle indeed. While everyone was doing that, we got our hands on with the Gigabyte S1080, and this is actually a Windows 7 PC. This is not out yet, but they said that by around summertime it should come out. It's another 10.1-inch capacitive display, resolution 1024 by 600. It had an Intel Atom dual-core processor. It was 1.6 gigahertz, as well as 2 gigs of RAM, a 320-gig hard drive. It had, of course, all the ports that you would expect, USB 2.0, USB 3.0, Ethernet, VGA, SD card reader. It actually had a SIM card slot as well, so it might support phone calls as well as data over 3G. They actually kind of had this cool docking station that they said that they're going to sell for about $60. It added 4 more USB ports, VGA, Ethernet, headphone, microphone jack, as well as full HDMI out. So considering that this tablet's not really going to cost too much, you're looking at maybe about $399, and if you spend the extra, you know, $40 to $60, you can pick up a cool docking station, so you can kind of really get the most out of your unit. And this conference was really light on e-readers. There really wasn't a ton of them at all. The only ones that we saw that worth mentioning was the Asus DR900. A lot of people have seen pictures of it floating around the internet. We've written about it a few times, but this was actually the first time we got true hands-on experience. And it wasn't at the Asus booth. It was in this little... Okay, so for Computex, this was the largest one that they had this year, where it was spread out between about 5 different buildings, including the Taiwan World Trade Center, and then next to it was a few other exhibition halls, and then in a Nangang business district, they had another hall with multiple floors, and it was in Nangang, which was the biggest companies were there, so we spent about 3 days there, and we went to the smaller halls where it was mainly just, you know, vendors from China, vendors from Taiwan. There were little booths, maybe 1 or 2 people there. One of these little booths actually had the Asus DR900 there, and it was actually rebranded the TZ900. And we tried to find out where we can buy these. No one really knew, but all they know is they had a few models there. And this was the coolest e-reader that I've probably handled all year. And I wish to God that Asus would finally kind of mass produce release this. They're doing the EEE Note, and I don't understand why they're not doing that. While they're doing that and not the DR900. Full touchscreen, you know, 9+ inches. RS feeds, internet experience, you know, the amount of customization that allows you to do from everything from fonts to margins to you know, what language you want it to be in. It's absolutely, it was brilliant to use, and we got full video of it on our site, so if you're a fan of e-readers and you want to really see how much I think of this e-reader, it really comes out in a video. I'm gushing all over it, the entire expose that we did. Also, there was the eWonderPad, which was an interactive learning device. It's based on Android 2.2, but it's a total new GUI. It's not like your traditional Android experience. It's all customized towards middle schoolers, and it allows you to do phonics, science, learning-based games, but it's all touchscreen. So this means that a teacher can give you a test on this tablet, you fill in the answers, and then, you know, you send the data to the teacher, they mark your text, and, you know, whatever. It basically works on annotations, where you can make all these little edits in a book, send it to someone else, send it to your teacher. She can mark it, grade it, exit, and then send it back to you. Not only were your answers there, but her remarks are there as well. So I can really see this doing really well. It's about 300. The company said that they had signed agreements for like Holland and the Netherlands and the UK and other places in Asia. So I'm kind of optimistic that this actually might be a good seller here. If they can find, you know, somebody major to distribute it for them, it should be pretty good news. There's a few other kind of cool things. Delta was there, and if you guys have watched our CES coverage, Delta and Bridgestone work sort of hand-to-hand with technology, and they were showing off some of their displays that we saw at CES, 8-inch as well as a 13-inch. The 21-inch screen wasn't there. It's basically e-paper that displays color, and Delta was saying that not a lot of, you know, e-reader companies have signed on for the technology, although the resolution is absolutely crazy in this. I don't know, you know, if I had an e-reader company, it would probably, for me, be a toss-up between Pixel Qi and the Delta electronics type of stuff. It basically will display 4,000 colors no matter which version you have. The resolution is tremendous, you know, both in color and in e-ink. You're looking at, say, for the 13.1-inch, 1600 by 1200 pixels, and then 800 by 600 for color. The big thing that Delta was telling us was that they're sort of going to be moving into billboard-type e-ink displays. You know, low power, high flexibility. They're going to be making giant 50 to 60-inch ones. So, and grocery symbol tags. So these really low cost, ultra thin price things with barcodes built into it, so you can scan it for inventory, you can change the prices on demand. Right now, if you look in all the grocery stores, it's just paper everywhere, and as prices change, they got to print out more paper. So with these screens, it sort of saves energy, it saves the trees, so I can see this catching on. Speaking of e-paper and e-displays, we stopped by the Pixel Qi booth, and they had a new screen for the Notion Ink Atom. You guys may have heard of this. It was one of the most talked about independent tablets during 2010, and they finally released in 2011, although they really don't have enough units to satiate demand. One of the things that we discovered with the Atom was that the screen display wasn't really that great. It almost felt like it had two panes of glass, and this kind of made a high degree of glare. Now, they issued a screen protector that was supposed to fix it, but it really didn't. So Pixel Qi made a new screen just for the Atom, and it was basically what we have on video, kind of documents everything like that. So check it out. It's definitely one of the coolest changes to the Notion Ink Atom, and I really hope they sort of adopt this. Speaking of such, with the Pixel Qi booth this year, they had this new 7-inch and 10-inch screen. Resolution was killer. The thing behind Pixel Qi is that a lot of their displays take little to no power versus traditional LCD or LED displays. You can go from super high color and then hit a little flitch switch, and you almost go to a monochrome e-ink based experience. The really cool thing about Pixel Qi technology is that you can use it under direct sunlight and you see no glare. And that's really been the hyping factor behind e-ink based e-readers, is that you can read them in direct sunlight and you won't really get a glare. And this is something that Amazon has beaten to death during all their television commercials. and they usually use the iPad as sort of a benchmark, you know, for all tablets, saying, you know, look how you get no glare with us, look how much glare you get with them, whereas with the Pixel QuickScreen technology, you actually get no glare in the sun. So there was a few companies that signed on to use it, most notably ZTE, which was a large telecom in China, and so they've done a 7-inch Android version, which we got hands-on with. So if you want to check any of that out, check out the front page of our blog, and it should be there. So I'm really behind Pixel Qi. Both management team and the technology is very, very sound. And for me, I'm all about e-readers. I love the fact that it's easy on the eyes, high contrast, high resolution. The only thing is sometimes I wish my e-reader did a color. So often I have an e-reader for reading and I have a tablet just for messing around. How great would it be to have like a true tablet that is a true e-reader by, you know, at the flick of a switch, it goes from full color, you know, your Android or whatever OS you're using. And then you hit a switch and you can just, you know, go into reading a book. It's sort of like an amalgamation of two types of technologies, but built into one. On other news, No has just released a new iPad app. Now, No is short for knowledge. They're a company that whose management came from textbooks and e-textbooks. They tried working on a large 14-inch tablet. It never really played out. It's been very well documented on our site about the experiences of No. So they made a new app, as well as an app store. It's basically just university, college, and high school level textbooks. They have saying that they have 70,000 textbooks with a 30 to 50% discount off of the list prices. So you can save a lot of money and go with them. The one kind of cool thing that I like about the app was that you can organize the books into classes, semesters. You can even read the books on it, make annotations, make little sticky notes. Anything that you can do with a real book, you can really do with this. So I think No is onto something really solid with the iPad app. It's in beta right now, so you can go to www.no.com and check out, you know, more or less like the app for yourself. It's a free download for the iPad, although if you want to buy books, you kind of have to register. Notable exceptions for the conference: Hanvon wasn't there, Huawei was not there at all, and those are two kind of big companies based in China. Some people pronounce it Huawei, and they've done a lot of tablets and e-reader based technologies. It's kind of weird that they weren't there. We were looking for them and then emailed their press people and they said, nope, in fact, we are not in attendance for that. So that about wraps it up. You know, we had a really great time at Computex this year. There was a lot of really interesting technologies there. Again, my highlights were probably the Asus DR900, the Asus Pad Phone, the Asus Mimo Pad, which was also a 3D tablet, as well as the ViewSonic 7X. So those are probably my votes of things to really look out for. I think that those will probably be, you know, the coolest gadgets coming out in a tablet and e-reader space in 2011. So when the holidays come and you're wondering what gifts you should buy, take an idea for that. Now, what does the future hold for good e-reader? Well, we're going to be going to IFA, which is in Germany, and this is around September, so it's more or less the European equivalent of the Consumer Electronics Show or Computex, so we'll be there. And during the next few months, we're going to be going to a lot of different publishing conventions, both independent publishing, digital publishing, ebooks. As you probably know, if you've been following the Good e-Reader blog with any regularity during our almost 2 years now of online publication, we used to cover exclusively e-readers, then we moved into e-books and tablets, and we really got into doing a lot of articles lately, probably during the last 3 months, on digital publishing and the state of affairs as far as companies that offer self-publishing programs such as Pubit by Barnes & Noble, BookBaby's new program, as well as self-publishing through Smashwords, Amazon, and a lot of other companies. So we've really sort of broadened our horizons talking with very popular authors by doing interviews with companies as well as well-known political figures on the state of affairs on digital publishing, self-publishing, and the reason why some people got into it. We talked with everything from comic book writers to, you know, Stan Lee's his child who, or, you know, young man who does all sorts of comic book art. We do a lot, and so we're not slowing down. If anything, we're picking it up in the amount of conventions we attend that focuses strictly on publishing traditionally as well as digital publishing and interviews with authors. You know, we're not just interested in knowing about the underlying technologies that go into digital publishing, but we're interested in actually getting the human story, why people decide to self-publish. You know, if you look at some people that we've interviewed lately, they've been well-known figures, if not celebrities, and instead of going with a $1 million Penguin or Random House deal, they'll decide to digital publish. You know, some of them do it because they want more creative freedom. Some people say because they don't want deadlines. And some people just say they're control freaks and they just can't handle people having their two cents. You know, they want to hire the book cover artist. You know, they want to do all these things. And so self-publishing gives them the freedom to do it. So if you want to know more about independent publishing, we actually have a great new feature called the Indie Author Initiative, and you can find that by clicking on a tab on our blog called Indie Author News. And for pretty well the last 3 months, that's what we've been focusing on, as well as we've always focused on digital publishing in terms of letting you guys know about all the different services that are offered, as well as our reviews of those services. Some are free, some are paid. There's a lot out there. Which one should you go with if you want to self-publish? We are really a great resource to help you. So if you're an aspiring author and you want to publish digitally, or even if you're an existing author and you want a little bit more creative freedom, check out our Indie Author News, as well as our service that pretty well reviews every digital publishing company out there that allows you to do it. So for Good E-Reader, this is Marcus. You've been listening to the Good E-Reader radio show, and you can capture all of our videos on Computex at our YouTube channel at youtube.com/user/GoodEReader. You can follow us on Twitter at GoodEReader, as well as you can search us and befriend us on Facebook as well. We make ourselves tremendously accessible. We pump out tons of content. We pretty well did about 60 different reviews and videos at Computex this year. So check it all out, or you can join in on the fun on our forums and talk with other authors. Get firmware for your e-readers, user manuals, as well as our reviews of everything that we cover. Again, a good e-reader, we just don't parrot the news. We make the news. This is Marcus. Everybody take care.